Hello, and welcome to Inside View, a weekly public service show on Cool 101.7. I'm News Director Dave Doney, joined today by my broadcast partner Joel Riley and our special guests, Doug Stout and Matt Dole.
Doug, obviously, if we're having you in here, we're talking about history, veterans, and those kind of things. But, boy, coming up in September, this is so wonderful. And, Matt, you've, I know, been involved in this historical marker for the Hudson area. But maybe talk a little bit about what's going to be taking place.
I mean, this is 83 years in the making. I mean, finally, you know, on September 8th, 1942, you know, the plane crash on Hudson Avenue that killed six people on board, two women on the ground. You know, it's been like local lore, local talk for years. And finally, there's going to be some markers placed on the site or across the street from the site so that, you know, these people are remembered.
You know, folks may not remember what happened back then.
Right.
Can you give a little bit of background on that?
You know, so on that day, a plane took off from Dayton carrying six Army Air Corps personnel. It was rainy, low overcast skies, flew over Newark. It caught some people's attention because they heard it turn around. When it turned around, it was down about the works. Like I say, it was a very low cloud cover. By this time, it's just about noon. It's the day after Labor Day. People are busy downtown. You know, that's where everybody went. It dropped out of the clouds at about the old county jail, which was then the county jail, and the tail section hit a tree, and that damaged the tail to some extent. We're not exactly sure how much. The pilot got control. He started then north up 3rd Street, barely missed the courthouse, barely missed the steeple of the Second Presbyterian Church. So his path was somewhere along there. There are eyewitnesses, some having him driving or flying over the old carrels. About Church Street, part of the tail section fell off. The co-pilot and the pilot tried jumping out of the plane. They were, of course, too low. Their parachutes didn't open. The pilot went through a home on Locust, killed him. The co-pilot ended up on a B&O loading dock at the end of Wyoming Street. Of course, it killed him. And then the plane went down on the house of Jane Weston on the corner of Wyoming Street and Hudson Avenue. Jane was in the house along with two other women who were working on the house. They were hanging drapes. They were both injured, but they weren't killed. Jane was killed. Dolly Campbell, who was walking by the house, returning from downtown, she lived on Wyoming. Part of the engine came off and crushed her. So it was just mayhem, of course. Trying the fire department, you know, of course, was not prepared for that sort of thing. But like I say, it killed them all. But you know, the crash report's very scarce as to exactly what happened. It's World War II. There's not, you know, this happened. Mm-hmm. I mean, we aren't the only city this ever happened in.
Yeah.
I think the crash report was done in a week, you know, whereas now, you know, it'd be 3 years, you know, and they really couldn't come to any great decision on what happened exactly because the plane was just smashed to pieces.
So, Joel, you've lived here a long time. You're parents and
I've heard the story, but I didn't know that detail of it.
I wasn't sure if you had heard that, because when I was first approached by Bob Melville, he's like, hey, we're gonna try to get a marker up. I'm like, for what? And then he started to tell me the story. I'm like, you're kidding me. So then I started to do the research on it. It is amazing. How did you get involved in this, Matt? I mean, what was your role? How did you kind of come to this point with this?
Yeah, I just, I like history, and I followed what Doug was doing. By the way, he did that off the top of his head, no notes. That's pretty impressive to know that story,
now,
isn't
hold
it?
Hold on a minute. This guy here, I can ask him anything I need to about any veterans, any history.
It's true enough.
He's got it.
History, but I need books to read. So I followed what Doug did, and I just thought a marker a permanent marker needed to be placed. And so I thought I could help do some fundraising, and we did that. We undertook a fundraising campaign, sort of crowdsourced it, and raised enough to not only do sort of the traditional marker that people know and they'll see, but we also have an interpretive plaque that will have some photos and more detailed information of the story Doug told. And that'll go on the grounds at Hudson House there at the corner of Wyoming and Hudson. And on September 8th, the anniversary, we'll be at the Midland Theater to dedicate the whole thing.
When you were going and you were seeking, you know, to get funds, did you find people were going, what are you talking about? We need to, what happened here? I mean, I got to imagine there was a lot of folks who were like, what?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there were a lot of folks who weren't aware of it. We've had donations from all over Ohio and from out of state, and a lot of different people, folks who are interested in local history, some folks who are connected to some families who are involved. We had local support from the city of Newark and Explore Licking County, and got it done relatively quick. It's been a few years in the process, but we got it done relatively quickly. Got the marker actually is from Ohio too. A lot of these historical markers are made down in Marietta, Ohio. So a little bit of a local connection there, at least regional connection. And I'm glad that we'll have a permanent place to tell the story that Doug has really done an outstanding job of researching, highlighting, to make sure it didn't die.
It seems like that with the genealogy business, that people are more interested in their own lineage, finding their roots in that. That seems to have kind of expanded out. It seems like people are more history aware than ever right now. Is that fair or no?
I mean, I think so, yeah. Especially in this area. This area loves their history. Mm-hmm. And so anything we can do history-wise, you know, it seems like people are interested in it. You know, and if you make it interesting and just you know, start saying dates, you're good, you know. But it's a good time to be a researcher because you can find a lot of stuff online now that, you know, you used to have to sit through, you know, and sift through newspapers and microfilm and, you know, make yourself dizzy.
So what are the ways you do that now when you're looking for a specific event? Is it just Google it and go and follow the rabbit hole?
I don't like Google.
Okay.
You've got to do these pay sites. I mean, Ancestry, newspapers.com, and they each one have like different little niches. So you still have to know, kind of figure out where I'm looking. Plus, I'm really big on going back to as close to the original source as possible. You know, so if I can find newspapers of the time, those are my best things. And the nice thing about this was it was covered pretty well at the time. They had a lot of eyewitness accounts in the newspaper at that date. So it's not, I think I remember, it's what happened at that time. So when we did the documentary on this, we could use those actual recollections of those people and say, this is where I was when I heard this, or this is where I was. And the crash report had one guy basically that said he saw the whole thing when he heard the plane go across. Hmm. So it's looking for that sort of thing to me, rather than what I'm finding is a lot of the local history is wrong, because like somebody maybe wrote an article about it in 1940 of some event, and then somebody in researching it went back to that article and took that as that's the truth. And so now that's got published in 10 years later, and then 10 years later, you know, everybody just uses that. It's that original research that, and like I say, now it is nicer because you can get a little bit more online. I mean, I could talk all day about this, guys.
Well, patience of Job then, because, I mean, like you said, you think you've got it, then you got to go back. You got to look. You got to go back. You got to verify and all this. And I'm not saying that folks don't do that, but, you know, to Joel's point, most of us now, when we want to learn something, just Google it and go.
Right.
But, I mean, you have to have some patience to go back and do that.
I you know, in one of my articles this week, I had to go back and correct something I said, because I found it was a local event that happened to Edward Roy, who was the first librarian president, that it was in a local paper, supposedly, but I don't have that local paper, but it was reprinted in the Chicago Tribune. And the article, and I found that in the Chicago Tribune, of all places, picked up an article from Newark, where he said he was in Newark in 1864, and that was the only proof that I'd ever found that he was here in 1864.
Wow.
So it's just, you can't be afraid to say, oh, I was wrong.
Yeah.
Because you might find something.
Obviously, back in the 1940s, you didn't have the national news like you have now, but you had AP and all those kind of things. Did this hit? I mean, was there? Did you find stories as you were putting this together from across the country going, hey, we had a B-52 go down in Newark, or no?
No.
Nothing at all.
I mean, there was some AP, but like I say, it just wasn't. There were other planes, I don't want to say falling out of the sky, but this training type of thing wasn't. And, you know, we're just in the war. And I think part of me thinks that the prop, because of they don't want to damper the war effort and stuff, so they don't want to, like, we don't want to focus on this.
Yeah.
When I went looking for, because I was, you know, reading the papers, and they said there was a debris trail through town. Well, don't you think there'd be records in city council or county committee? Somebody had to clean that up. There's nothing. And I just, loose lips sink ships. I don't know. You know, if that was just the mentality, we're at war, this happened, it's a tragic thing, but we need to just move on now.
Again, remind folks when all these big events are going to be taking place, where, what's the particulars they need to know about?
Sure, yeah. We'll be dedicating the marker on September 8th at the Midland Theater. It's the anniversary. You know, people are like, Monday at 10 a.m., why are you doing that? Well, it's the actual anniversary of the crash. So we'll be at the Midland Theater September 8th. Doors will open at 10 a.m. We're going to show Doug's documentary at 10:30. That's when things will get kicked off. We'll dedicate the marker at 11:30 and hear some folks talk. We'll have the colors presented by Newark Air Junior ROTC. And it should be a great event. And folks can just show up. The Midland's a big place, and we're happy that they're working with us. But if they want to reserve tickets, they can go to newarkb25.com and sign up for some tickets.
Is there a cost if folks want to come?
No cost. Absolutely free. Come on out. We want this to be a community celebration and dedication to making this memory permanent.
So then where will if folks didn't hear in the beginning, where will this actual marker be?
Yeah, we'll have two things. We'll have the historical marker right across from the house that was hit at Wyoming and Hudson. It's on the grounds of the Hudson House that's now an event space right on the corner there. And we'll also have a interpretive plaque with more detailed information and photos right there as well.
And that Hudson Historic Community, folks really do their best to keep that up, right? I mean, I know, you know, we talk about Bob Meldo and we have fun, you know, Bob could talk forever. I mean, they do take pride in what is happening there. I have to imagine this is a sense of pride for these folks down there.
Yeah, in fact, when I first broached the subject of trying to get a marker, I wasn't sure what group it would go through. You know, you have to have some group that can take the money and then, you know, buy the marker and all that. And I wasn't sure who that was going to be. And Bob sort of came to me and he said, it's going to be us. Of course it's going to be us. This is our project, which I loved, by the way. I mean, mm-hmm. I was out looking and he volunteered. So they're really dedicated to that area, as everybody knows. And I think they're happy to have this marker. Plenty of parking there at the Hudson House, so folks can pull over and get out and read the information. And I think this can be a resource for the community moving forward.
What was this process to get a marker? I don't know, maybe if you know or not. I mean,
yeah.
It's not like you just call up somebody at the state of Ohio and go, hey, I'd like to get a marker out here. What's the process for doing that?
Yeah, so there is an official Ohio marker program. This is not part of that. This is independent of that because they get, I was told, something like 1,000 applications a year and do like 20 of them a year. Mm-hmm. So that's a real hard thing to get into. And so we looked at that. We said it probably isn't a great option. We think we can raise some money and get our own marker. And so then it just became getting a group of folks together, Doug and Bob and some other folks. And we wrote it. We, you know, with Doug's help, we wrote what the marker says. And then we went to Siwa Studios in Marietta. They do markers all across the country. And they were great to work with. Got that done, and then worked with a company out of Pennsylvania to do the interpretive plaque. So mm-hmm. There's groups out there that do these things, and it was really, the fundraising was the linchpin, right? I mean, it was fun to talk about what the marker would say, but we had to have the money, and it was a few thousand dollars to do the project the way we did it. Mm-hmm. So it took a little bit of money, but we had great support from the community and elsewhere.
You've been listening to Inside View on Cool 101.7. I'm News Director Dave Doney. I'd like to thank my broadcast partner, Joel Riley, and our special guests today, Doug Stout and Matt Dole. And as always, I'd like to thank you for listening. Have a great day.